This is Around the A, a weekly look at the top stories, news, and interviews from the NHL's top developmental league with your hosts, David Foote and Patrick Williams on the Sports Podcasting Network.
It's another edition of Around the A, episode 14 on the Sports Podcasting Network and wherever else you get your podcasts. David Foote and Patrick Williams here with you. Thanks for joining us again as we continue to take a trip around the American Hockey League and catch you up with the latest news, notes, and stories from the top developmental league for the NHL. It's All-Star Week, Pat, and you're headed out to Ontario, California to take in the festivities, and I feel like it's a nice time for guys to get 4 days off or so, because this stretch between the holiday break and the All-Star break is absolutely bananas for a lot of teams around the AHL.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, no more so than for the Belleville Senators. Eight games in 16 nights, hopscotching across the American Hockey League map. And mind you, this is a league. There's not a charter travel, so you're dealing with a lot of early morning flights and things of that nature, and bus rides. And this is also the time of the year when the weather gets a little bit more messy. So teams have had to deal with that. So I completely agree with you. This is the right time, and especially going into the heart of the schedule now, the second half, February, March schedules can be brutal in this league. So you get 4 or 5 days off. And even for the players who aren't off, they get a nice trip out to California and everything that comes with that, the sun and the palm trees and the mountains. So, it's a pretty nice setup all around this year. And a lot of teams, I think, frankly, need the break because there's some – you said it before, this is a league of streaks. And the league is pretty much in full-blown streak mode at the moment.
Yeah, we're going to have lots from the AHL All-Star Classic coming up on the show next week for episode 15, because you're headed out that way. We'll have comments from Dave Andrews in his final State of the League address, and we'll talk to some of the big guns from around the AHL coming up on episode 15. This week, we've got one of the big guns in AHL broadcasting, Jason Shia, who's the director of broadcasting, the voice of the Charlotte Checkers, is going to be with us to dig deep into the reigning defending Calder Cup champions from 2019. We're also going to chat with Tony Andrikaitis, who covers the Lehigh Valley Phantoms specifically, but also provides a pile of great American Hockey League coverage as well at InsideAHLHockey.com. So all of that is coming up later on in the show. We'll also get to some of those All-Star lineup changes that we predicted last week would be coming this week. But let's do a quick recap of the past week, Pat. You mentioned the Belleville Senators on that road trip. And again, I don't like to lay heavy on the Belleville stuff, but it's hard to ignore the fact that coming into the middle of the week anyway, before their game in Milwaukee when we taped this, they had only missed out on one of a possible 12 points through their first six games of the road trip. It's kind of an incredible feat, really, that they've been able to string together so many wins on a road trip that, as you mentioned, is not an easy one to do.
No, it's not. They've gone into some pretty tough buildings, on this road trip. Grand Rapids, who are hot right now, they went up to Manitoba to play the Moose, and the Moose are always tough, especially with their goaltending. You go right down Rockford, they played a Monday afternoon game this week, so a lot of challenges. They had to deal with Rochester to start the trip, and they finished the trip up Friday night and come right back home Saturday night, and then head right into the All-Star break. So 5-0, 1-0 so far this trip, going into play on Tuesday night, and really remarkable how they've done it. Full March Detroit man, 15 defensemen this year, over 100 transactions, midway through the season. So everything going on with Ottawa, everything going on really, on and off the ice that they have to deal with. And yet on the ice, Troy Mann and his team they keep getting the job done. And this is a really dangerous team. You start trying to you know, game plan out a couple months and you see what they might have. And this is a team I would not want to be facing down the stretch if I was a North Division opponent or a team that they may see in the playoffs, because this team pretty much has it all at the moment.
Yeah, and like you say, more potentially coming down the line when Ottawa's season comes to an end. The Grand Rapids Griffins have also been pretty hot of late after a slow start when we covered them a few weeks back here on Around the A. What are you attributing their recent turnaround to?
Yeah, they had a really tough start. On paper, I mean, they look as good as any team in the league, but it certainly didn't play out that way. They went through a really, really slow period, especially November into December. Then they went on a 16-game road trip out west, and managed to come through okay with that. And then they get back home and have some more trouble on home ice. But they're on an 8-game homestand right now, handling it pretty well. They finish up with three more games this week. And so far, so good for them. They're in a tough fight for the playoffs. I think the biggest factor for them right now will be how much the parent Detroit Red Wings come calling for them, because it's been a pretty steady movement of players east-west across the state of Michigan as they, both sides try to find some sort of continuity. But, they got Moritz Seider back for the World Junior Championship, Joe Valeno as well. So all in all, things look pretty good for them right now. Now, they're a team, I think, that could go on a good run once they have their lineup in place. But, they're a team another team I wouldn't want to have to face in the second half. They're pretty dangerous. Chris Terry, one of the best scorers really of the past decade in this league, and just a pretty deep lineup. Matt Pumpel, go right down the list. He brought in Kevin Poulin. Actually, he had been over in Europe the last few years and was injured, and now they signed him to a PTO. And he's come in and played really well for them. So it's given them some good steady goaltending while there's been some lineup changes with Calvin Picker going up to Detroit. So this is a good team right now, and I think they're once they get everything on track, they should be on their way.
Yeah, they've got points in six straight, and they are the only team to steal a point from the Belleville Senators on that that current road trip that the B-Sens are on. On the not side of things this week, we look at the Rochester Americans, who we're at the top of the North Division pretty much from the outset after Utica slowed down a little bit. They were fairly comfortable atop that division as well, Pat, but they've slowed almost to a screeching halt of late, losers of a pile in a row, and things have really turned around for the Amerks.
Yeah, this was not what they needed. A 3-3 weekend when they were already struggling. They started at home against the Cleveland Monsters, and then they went on the road for back-to-back games. Lehigh Valley, who's really gotten hot, and then the Hershey Bears, who have been really hot now for the better part of a month and a half plus. So it was a bad finish. They lost 4-1 in Hershey. Just not what you'd expect. Rookie goalie Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, finally really got his first shot at the American Hockey League. He had hip surgery in the offseason. A phenomenal year last year in the NHL with Sudbury. One goalie of the year, player of the year, everything you could want. Buffalo Sabres second round pick. But he's had to work his way back into to game shape. He was in the ECHL up until this point, and he had a little bit of an uneven start to his AHL career. He's actually going back to the ECHL now. But it's just been a team. They've looked just sort of discombobulated here lately. Now, I guess the question becomes, is this just midseason druthers that teams will go through every now and then, or is this something more? So I think definitely have to keep an eye on it. They're in a tough, real tough battle right now. They were a team atop the Eastern Conference standings. Now they've kind of slipped down near that playoff line in the North Division. So they're in a little bit of a dicey spot, especially with the Laval Rocket hanging around, the Syracuse Crunch starting to find their way a little bit. So, this is the kind of thing, if they don't get this thing stopped right now, could get a lot more off track here, and they could end up fading. So definitely bears watching, but this is also a good team when they are healthy, when they do have their full roster. So, you know, I think if there is a team that can kind of bounce back, it should be Rochester.
And again, not to harp on the League of Streaks theme that we've really put in play here on Around the A, but a 12-game point streak through November, essentially the whole month and midway into December, is what got the Rochester Americans comfortably atop the division, and now they're on a 7-game losing skid, and it's amazing how quickly those solid runs can be erased by a string of bad play. And unfortunately for the Amherst, the North Division is not the one that you can afford to go on losing runs like that, because the slide that you can take from top to bottom is a real quick one in that division.
Yeah, it really is. 10 points separate first through sixth place. I mean, so essentially you have, there's four spots. Two of those teams are going to miss, and you even still have Cleveland and Binghamton hanging around a little bit. Binghamton had 1-8 in a row. They slowed down this past weekend, but they're hanging around, and they actually gave Rochester a pretty hard time, earlier this month. So, yeah, this is the kind of thing where you mentioned it. This is a league of streaks. When you have your full roster, when you're healthy, that's when you have to pile up the points. You have to put together those 10 or 12 game point streaks, because inevitably in this league, bad times are coming, and you need to have squirreled away a little bit of your money for that rainy days situation. And that's where the Rochester Americans find themselves at the moment. And they've already now faded 6 points off the lead. So they're actually really only 2 points clear of the playoff line. So, I mean, if you looked at them back at the end of November after they had that big run, you wouldn't have foreseen this. But on the other hand, this isn't all that surprising, just knowing what this league is about, because, it just runs hot and cold. I mean, look at even the best teams in this league will go through a streak. I mean, the Hershey Bears went on a tear, but, the first month or so of the season, they were very uneven. And right down the list, the Hartford Wolfpack, they have a 4-game losing streak. They were rolling for a while. Now they are in a tie for first place with Hershey in the Eastern Conference. But, things can go really askew very quickly here. And, that's why you really, when you have your team in place, you better make a run, because that's how you get in trouble in this league. When you don't do that, maybe you play 500 or so hockey or slightly above that, and that's not nearly enough to offset some of the bad times probably come further down the line.
Yeah, and glad you mentioned the Binghamton Devils. They deserve some big-time props for their 8-game winning streak. They've lost two in a row since then, but heading into that streak started just before New Year's and carried through most of the month so far of January, they'd only won back-to-back games twice in the season before that. So they're making a bit of a charge, which is important for them at this point in the season. Lots to talk about around the league over the last week. There was a suspension in the Bakersfield that is drawing a lot of headlines, with Brandon Manning being suspended for using a racial slur. The Hartford Wolfpack have lost essentially the reason that they were so successful to start the season, with Igor Shesterkin going up to the New York Rangers. And of course, with the All-Star Classic this weekend, there's a lot of in and out roster-wise that we need to touch on. And we'll do that coming up a little bit later on here in episode 14 of Around the A. But first, we're going to talk about another team that's been pretty hot of late, Pat. The Charlotte Checkers are 9-1. The defending champs were real slow out of the gate, but they've turned things around. And we're going to chat with Jason Shia, the voice of the Charlotte Checkers, here coming up about what's been going well for them.
Yeah, they went through, I mean, one of the most dramatic changes you'll see in an offseason, even for the American Hockey League, where once you win a championship, you often see rosters, blown apart pretty well. But they win even more so, and they just lost several key pieces. But that's the function of the American Hockey League. You're developing your players for the parent team, and then even some of the older players, they found opportunities elsewhere. Andrew Podorolski, the playoff MVP last season, went out to the Anaheim Ducks system. So, Mike Vellucci left to go to the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins. He brought the Dustin Tokarski with him. So that's the nature of the league, and they felt the brunt of that early on. They were battling instead of last place, and yet here they are. 11 wins past 12 games, 15 of their past 18. They've really just charged up the standings and added a real wrinkle to that Atlantic Division race. They were a team that was looking like they were pretty close to being out of it altogether, and they've gotten hot and made that race even more crowded. So we'll see how that unfolds. But this is a pretty dangerous team. This is a team, especially without Njelkovic and net there. Last season's top goalie of the year, first team All-Star, who carried the team on their playoff run. Jani Kukkonen, who's a second rounder, he came back from season-ending surgery last season. He had missed that whole playoff run himself, and he's just gone on a tear lately. 9 points last week, looking every bit the prospect that they thought he was, and just a pretty good young team again, and it took them a while to get it all kind of organized with new head coach Ryan Warsawski. But they look really good, and they're going to be a tough out, it looks like, going into the second half.
So we'll hear a little bit about that transition. We'll reminisce on the 2019 Calder Cup run and talk about some of the prospects in the Carolina system with Jason Shia, the voice of the Charlotte Checkers, up next on Around the Edge. Check in with the defending Calder Cup champions, the Charlotte Checkers. Longtime voice of the Checkers, Jason Shia, is with us. Thanks for taking some time for us.
Anytime. This is a great podcast, and I'm loving it, actually. So this is great to be on it.
Yeah, well, great to have you. Those who may not know, Jason is one of the handful of AHL guys that's gotten the call to the big league as well. Once or twice with the Carolina Hurricanes. But let's talk about Charlotte a little bit. It's interesting, I think, when you look at the Carolina organization and the fact that the NHL club plays in Raleigh, but the AHL club is in Charlotte. What's it like to have, the farm team, if you will, playing in the bigger city and the bigger market?
Yeah, it's a good question. I heard when they originally talked about bringing hockey to North Carolina, at least Charlotte was one of the cities considered if they were going to bring it here, because it does make sense that, it's one of the bigger cities. But I have to say that they did it right. I mean, the Charlotte is a great American Hockey League city. Raleigh is on fire for the Canes. So we don't really conceive of it as one city being bigger than the other. The Canes have had hockey for a long time in Raleigh, and we've had hockey for a long time in Charlotte. Now, I think 10 years in the American League, and I think this is the biggest year we've had so far. So everything's going great in terms of that.
And you play in a pretty historic arena there at the Bojangles Coliseum. For fans who maybe haven't been there, aren't aware, what's the rink like? What's the atmosphere like on a game night in Charlotte?
Well, that's a great question. I was told that our Saturday night game against Toronto, which is a rematch, of course, of the Eastern Conference Finals last year, was the third highest attended game in Bojangles history for the Charlotte Checkers. So That was pretty amazing. It's an old school vibe, because this thing was built, I think, in the 1950s, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have the exact date, but it's an old barn. And when you walk in, it has a lot of character, and it is loud in this building. It is very, very loud. I've said it many times before. We were in the playoffs last year. Obviously, we went to some big buildings. You go to Toronto, you go to Hershey. We were in the finals against Chicago, and this was, and I know people say I'm biased, but it really was the loudest building. When we won double overtime in game 6 against Toronto and the Marlies to go to the Calder Cup finals, you were shaking. The building was vibrating.
Jason, along those lines, about, 5 years ago, I guess it's been, you moved from the downtown building over to the Bojangles. What was that whole, procedure like, and what has it done for the Checkers franchise?
When we were in the old building, or I say the old building, but I think it's called Spectrum Arena or something now. I call it Time Warner Cable. That's what it was before, but whatever. We were there. You were in for a game, and then you were booted. And you went in there. It was very combative. They treated you like you did. They didn't want you in the building. Even though the facility was nice, it was a really nice arena, it wasn't a home. And that makes a difference. You don't have home ice advantage when your players are only there for game day, it seems like. We were practicing in a facility that was never really intended to have a professional American Hockey League team in there. And so guys were functioning out of a very small room. You go to Bojangles, you go to the Coliseum, and it's yours. You move in, you're there. You're there 90% of the time. And so that factors in to being comfortable when you're playing home games. And I think we probably, in the last 5 years, have the best home record in the AHL. It is rare to lose games in this building.
They did a really nice job, too. I mean, like you mentioned, that building built in the 50s. But in a lot of ways, it's very modern. They added a lot of kind of team-specific touches to that. Was that something that was really an objective for the entire Checkers team to do?
Well, you know, yeah, I think it was definitely, without question. I walked into the building in the summer. So we announced we were going to move. I was in the building. And then we went on a really, really long road trip, as you can imagine, while the construction was still being undertaken. And I remember walking in here just not long before the season started. I was in the building going, well, we're never going to play here because this will never get done. It's impossible. And then we came back from, I don't know what it was. We were on the road for like 3 weeks. We came back and I could not believe what they had accomplished in the time it took. Tara Black is the CEO of the team. She's probably going to write a book one day on what it took to get it all done, to marshal the resources and to coordinate the efforts of so many different people in order to make this a reality. It really is inconceivable, having seen the building in the previous shape it was in, to playing in the first game of the year. I think it was against Manitoba. It was unbelievable. The transformation was incredible.
You mentioned Tara Black, and you know she's won all sorts of awards, and you know she's overseen a lot of different major plans and projects for the Checkers. What's it like to work for her on a day-to-day basis?
Well, she has a lot of great qualities. I would say one of the biggest things for me is she doesn't micromanage people. Mm-hmm. And as I've been with the Checkers for 13 years, I've never been micromanaged. And I won't name names, but every broadcaster knows every other broadcaster, and you hear stories, and they're horror stories. Because if you are a person who is in charge who feels the need to look over someone's shoulder every 2 seconds, it means, number one, you're not trusting in your hiring process because you don't believe you have the right people involved. And two, what does it say about the people you're hiring if they're not able to do the job efficiently enough, so you have to look over their shoulder every 5 seconds? You hire the people you know are best capable of doing the job, and you let them do it, and you oversee the operation. Tara, I think that's her method. I think that's her mode of operation. On top of it, she's obviously, you know, she's a very compassionate person. She's very forward thinking, and she's, you know, she's run a really, really good team, and I'm proud to work for her.
Let's talk a little bit about last season, Jason. You mentioned the atmosphere, in the East Final with Toronto. But what was that whole season like, the run up to winning the Calder Cup? I mean, Charlotte was a fairly dominant team for most of the year last year. But to put that stamp on it with the championship. What was that year like from the broadcasting perspective?
I was talking about writing a book. I could write a book on last year. It was without question the most stressful year. Okay. It was the most rewarding year of my career. It was magical. You know, I interviewed pretty much everybody, a part of that team last season, and whether or not they're with us or not, or come around and talk to me again, you ask them the same question. What was it like? And you have there's a stare, because it's very, very difficult to put what happened into words. Yeah, we were the best team in the American League pretty much from the get-go. We started off in Rochester, and we defeated them, and we beat them bad. And even after all the changes that were made with our roster as a result of injuries or the Hurricanes or just trades or whatnot, everything we did ultimately worked. And when we were playing against Toronto, I said, if we could beat the Marlies, more than likely we're going to win the whole thing. But we didn't really know, because our team was running out of gas in the Eastern Conference Finals. We had nothing left. I really believe that. Toronto ultimately, I think, lost. I don't want to rip on anybody, but the Checkers won the goaltending battle, okay? Alex Nedeljkovic and Dustin Nedarski proved to be too formidable for Toronto on a nightly basis. And the signings of Tomas Hurko, and then you have Dustin Nedarski coming in at the deadline, was the final, you know, pieces of the puzzle that we needed to go into the playoffs and win. I would put our Checkers team against any team that has ever played in this league's history, and I really do think up and down the lineup, it was insane what this Checkers team did. But even after it's all said and done, even when we won it, you never really knew what was going to happen until it happened. It only seemed inevitable when it was over. Yeah, we were the best team, but Tampa Bay was the best team in the NHL. What happened to them in the first round?
Yeah.
There's no guarantee going in the playoffs you're not going to run into a hot goalie. You're not going to run into a team at the right place, the right time, like Columbus was against Tampa Bay. But we overcame whatever obstacles were there. And we lost in game four to Toronto in their building. Instead of the series going to 3-1, it went to 2-2. It was an abysmal letdown, a bad goal in overtime. And I thought it was over. And everyone thought it was over. And you really do understand the adage that you die with every loss, because every loss in the playoffs, even though there weren't many, they were devastating. We lost game one in the finals, and then we went on to win four straight. But after losing game one, it was, like someone died. Mm-hmm. So it never really felt like, okay, we got this thing, until the final horn sound. Even Chicago in game five, they wouldn't die. They scored two goals at the end. Every time we tried to seal the deal, they kept scoring. So winning was both one of the culmination of so much work for a lot of people, and at the same time, a total and utter relief.
We're chatting with Jason Shia, who's the longtime voice of the reigning defending Calder Cup champion Charlotte Checkers. You mentioned the roster turnover and the change that team dealt with heading into last season. How about heading into this season, where you lose your head coach, which I would say is rare right after winning a championship, and then the season to this point where you guys have pretty well turned things around after a bit of a slow start. How did the coaching change affect things, and what have been the keys to that turnaround in recent weeks?
Okay, Mike Vellucci is a close friend of mine, a man I truly respect a great deal. I love him and his family, and it wasn't for him, we don't win the Calder Cup. The only reason this team is where it is right now is because Ryan Warsofsky took over as the head coach. So he had continuity going from Mike's, he was Mike's assistant coach, to being the head coach the following year. And Ryan Warsofsky is going to be a head coach in the NHL one day. He's a young guy, but he is extraordinarily hardworking. More than that, it takes more than hard work. He does have the skill set necessary to galvanize the players in the room, to make the adequate changes. And I think you've seen that over the last couple of weeks here, where the roster, the move to winning has not been exogenous. So the changes haven't come from the outside. They've come within the room. And that, to me, points to one thing. It points to the head coach having the ear of the players in the room, because he's the one guiding them. You have a good leadership group that's in place now. You had somewhat of a vaulted roster in the beginning, trying to find the right pieces. But ultimately, the solutions to the problems have come from the men who are on the ice, and we haven't had much turnover at all in the last month and a half or so. So I give full credit to the coaching staff, to Pat Dwyer, to Noah, the video coach, to Derek Wilkinson, to the work they did in Carolina to adjust the roster. But Ryan Warsofsky deserves a great deal of credit for what he's been able to do.
What's that like for guys like you, guys like Ryan, when you return after you win the championship 3-4 months later? And so many of the big personalities, the big faces from last year are either in Carolina or they moved on somewhere else. What's the vibe like that first couple of days around the team?
I remember walking into the room during training camp. Maybe it was just after training camp was sort of done. And I walked in the main room just to peek my head in, and I took a look around. I didn't know almost anyone in the room. And suddenly I felt like, it was my 13th year, I felt like I'm a stranger. Like, who are these people? And even in the first couple of games, you're looking at these guys skating around in the jerseys. And I'll be totally honest, it was hard for me to watch, because that number 6 didn't belong to that guy. There's a guy wearing number 7. He shouldn't be wearing that. Belongs to the guy who won the championship last year. And it took a while, not just for me, but for a lot of players who were even here last year. It felt very, very strange to go into it. And there was an adjustment period, without question, both in terms of the actual gameplay, guys getting used to playing with each other on the same team, and also mentally as well, to get over the fact that there were more of them than there were us. And now you don't think of it in terms of the new guys and the old guys. Now, as we sit here and talk to you in the middle of January, we are the Charlotte Checkers again. We are a team and a cohesive unit working together under a great coach with one goal, and that's to return to the playoffs and defend the cup. That was not the side of things, the mental side of things, just about 2 months ago. It took time, It took losses and wins to make everyone realize what to do, what works and what doesn't work. And now we're a team. I really believe it. And it's, I have to say, right now, even though we're in the midst of a really, really good winning streak and all that, this team can do some damage. I don't think all the pieces are quite there. And I think there are going to be some changes coming in the future in terms of movement from Carolina. So there's half the season left and there's a lot more to be done. But I like where we are right now.
You know, we see Ryan, Warsawski, we see him kind of the public face of him, you know, behind the bench or interviews or what have you. But you ride with him on the bus rides, on the plane rides, day-to-day interactions. What's he like as a person, as a coach, personality-wise?
He's an intense guy. And the one thing he says is, I hate to lose. And Mike Vellucci was like that too. And I know it's easy to say that, who likes to lose? Nobody likes to lose. But they're... he's been with us for 2 years now, and losing is abnormal. It's the anomaly. It's not the way we've done things the last couple of years. Mostly you've won. So in the very beginning, what he did was, instead of complain, instead of demand Carolina make sweeping changes, all he did was get to work. That's all he did. He worked as hard as he possibly could, individual, one-on-one meetings with the team, talking to guys, trying to get them to progress as players, taking on guys who had smaller roles last year, trying to put them into a much bigger situation where he genuinely felt they would thrive. And numerous players now are coming to the forefront as being players who are carrying the team last year as supporting players, and now they're the starring players. And that's, I think, because of his personality. He's a great guy. I mean, I see one of the first head coach I've ever been older than, and it's weird for me. I'm the oldest member of the traveling team. Still strange to me. But he's a great guy. He gets along with anyone. It'd be very, very difficult not to get along with him as a person. But he's very intense. We play 3-on-3 hockey with the scratches, and I'll jump in goal. And whether or not he's playing 3-on-3 against the players who aren't playing, or he's on the bench, that guy does not want to lose, and he's a poor loser as well. So that should give you a window into what he thinks about all the time. Winning is the only acceptable option.
So you look at Alex Njoković last year, dream season for him, goalie of the year, he wins the cup, first team All-Star, everything you could possibly do, and then he finds himself back in the American Hockey League again, and he saw the parent team go out and get goaltending help from elsewhere. What has his season been like? What has his sort of mental adjustment been like, having to deal with that?
For Alex, I think it was tough. I don't think that's any secret. It was tough for him in the beginning. He wanted a better chance to prove himself an NHL goalie this exhibition season in particular. And having all the accolades you just talked about, one would think that would have been the case. It didn't really work out that way. There's nothing you can do. As a player, you're told when to play. You don't dictate when you play. So he just has to do what he's told. He works for the team. They didn't give him a game to play in the exhibition game, a full game. They didn't give him a chance to really establish himself. So you come down to the American League and you're going to be upset about it. And rightfully so. He should be mad. But he took that and he just moved it into, once he found his footing, he moved it into just winning on most nights. I think he's 8-1 in his last 9 games. It's very rare for Alex to lose a game. I mean, it's really from where he has started as a first-year pro, not being able to handle the workload in the American League and having a really serious learning curve, to where he is right now. He is, in my opinion, along the lines of a kid like Jake Bean. There's not really much to prove here in this league, and it's time he got an opportunity. But to say that and to actually have an opportunity, two different things. As a goaltender, it's very, very tough if you have two goalies in the NHL who are, you know, have longer-term contracts or who are establishing themselves or have established themselves already as NHL goalies. You got to wait your turn. So Alex just works hard. He'll wait his turn. I know he's very, very happy about being named an All-Star, as opposed to some goalies who don't want to go to those things. Alex, he's all about it. He wants to be there. He wants to represent Charlotte, wants to represent the American League. That's the kind of kid he is. He just wants to play the game.
You mentioned Jake Bean, and almost really after first, you know, a very quick learning curve, he looked so composed, so poised out there. And then obviously last year was an excellent rookie season. This year, more of the same. How close is he really to a full-time NHL job?
I would say you could count it in hours rather than in years. Okay, that's how close he is. I think he's right there. I think he's going to go there. I think he's going to go there, and they're going to give him a legitimate chance to establish himself as an NHL defenseman. That's what I mean. And I have to say this: I was talking to Ryan Warsawski, who has always been a card-carrying member of the Jake Bean fan club. He has said from the beginning, even when Jake struggled early in his career, he said, that kid's an NHL defenseman. He's going to be an NHL defenseman for a long time, and he still says that now. So he has the backing of his head coach and the belief of guys like Tim Gleason. They believe he can play in the NHL. I believe he can play there too. Jake just wants to establish himself as an NHL player, and I believe he will do it.
We'll take a couple more minutes here with Jason Shia, the director of broadcasting and the voice of the Charlotte Checkers. Let's talk a little bit about the NHL club and the relationship between Carolina Hurricanes and the Charlotte Checkers. Is it a smooth one? Is it easy given that the two cities are fairly close? Because that always helps, as we've learned on the show over the course of this first season. And how much cooperation and back and forth is there between the NHL club and the farm team?
Well, I was texting with Derek Wilkinson during last game, and I said, boy, if you look out into the crowd, it was a Saturday night, so there were so many people here. If you look out into the crowd and you see people wearing hockey paraphernalia, I would say 70-80% of it is Hurricane stuff. There's a lot of people wearing Checker stuff, obviously. But it's Hurricanes. People are wearing Hurricane stuff. They love the Hurricanes. This is a state that has had an NHL team for a long time. When they're successful, people want to go to the games. So our fans are comprised of a lot of Hurricanes fans who are, of course, also, they're primarily Charlotte Checkers fans. They live in Charlotte, but they love both teams. It's when I go to Grand Rapids, the whole building's Red Wings jerseys. Mm-hmm. Griffin's jerseys and Red Wings jerseys. It just makes sense when you go to call games in Cleveland. Well, who do you think they're rooting for? They're rooting for the big club down the road. It just makes sense. The geographical location makes sense. You work in simpatico with one another to establish hockey throughout the state. And I think that we won the Calder Cup last year. I know they were happy. They're doing what they can to win up there. We want them to win up there. We want them to be successful. I want that team to make the playoffs, and I want them to go on a long run, because all it does is promote hockey in North Carolina. It does. Winning promotes the sport, whatever sport it is. I don't care. Detroit's not going to sell out every game unless they start to win every night or win on most nights. People love winning. I don't care what market it is. You know, if Toronto goes in the tank for 10 years, they're going to have a hard time selling tickets, Toronto or not. I don't care what it is. You want to get people in the door. You want to get them enthused about the sport. Win. And what we saw Carolina do last year invigorated the state and the love of hockey in this region. I know North Carolina. Listen, there are hundreds of thousands of people who weren't born and raised in Charlotte, North Carolina, and in Raleigh, too. In fact, when you meet someone who says they're from Charlotte, you think, wow, what was here before we were all here? Right? It's people who came mostly from the north, who live in a better climate and better situations, and they've already loved the sport, and now they've taken to the two teams that are here in the American League and the NHL.
You mentioned that geography. For a number of years, the team was out in the Western Conference, and you really had some pretty wild divisional structures there for a while. Now you're in a more, I guess, geographically logical environment. What if anything has that done to help, you know, from a marketing standpoint as well as logistics?
Well, how about this? I remember once we were in California, so the game started at 10:30 Eastern time, and I believe we were playing Stockton. I think we were, and I believe at the beginning of the third period, we were down 6-0. So who in the heck was I calling the game for? Nobody's listening to that game. I mean, I'm sitting there going, this is insane. So if you're going to get blown out, do it in the Eastern time zone, for God's sakes, and not have to take 7-hour flights, whatever it is, to get across the country to go play a game in the middle of nowhere. So I am happy to be in the Eastern Conference. Not the greatest cities, okay? I don't think I'm going to buy any property in Utica anytime. And I love it. It's a nice town, whatever. Great, great fans. But I'd rather be in Austin, Texas. But at the same time, I'm happy to be in the Eastern Conference. The flights are way shorter. The travel between the cities is much easier. The scheduling has been much better, I think, with every passing year. The American League does a good job of the scheduling and making it so you're not taking too many long bus rides. So I'm happier. I think it works way better when your games are starting at 7 o'clock, or in Lehigh Valley when they start at 7:20, whatever it is.
You mean you're not rushing to come back up to Belleville to see us?
Oh, listen. Anytime I get a chance to see Troy Mann, count me in. Okay, Troy's one of the best. I'm also not shedding any tears about not going to Belleville.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Just the last thing here. Heading into the second half now. What do you see for the Checkers, and what's the outlook for them, and what are the potential challenges as they gun for a playoff spot here?
Right now, if this team were to stay intact, I tell you there probably isn't a significant challenge. So last year we were the best team in the American League. Okay, and I thought every time we stepped in the ice, you knew you were going to win. So if we were playing Team X, we're going to beat Team X. No problem. It's fine. We're going to beat them. There wasn't a team that stood in our path. This year, having seen just about everybody, including now Toronto, I do not believe there is a team that is unbeatable in the Eastern Conference. Okay? That's what I believe right now. So that means it's wide open. And our division's wide open. I don't know if Hartford can sustain the record they have without Shesterkin and goal. Hershey's a really, really good team. You know, Scarbosa, I don't know if he's back yet or not, but when he comes back, if he is back, they're a much better team with him. They've got great goaltending. That's going to be a team that's going to make the playoffs. The Checkers have the capability of going into the postseason and doing well, so long as the majority of their roster stays intact, the Hurricanes remain healthy, and I think if we can keep the course, we're going to be fine. So the challenges will be things that you can't see coming or you can't prevent. Somebody gets, God forbid, an injury, or you lose someone to a trade. That's all stuff. But if this roster stays intact, I like our chances. I like our team.
Yeah, the defending champs have been on a run of late 9-1 over their last 10. And Jason Shai describes the action for them. Thanks so much for doing this, man. Really appreciate the insight and your time.
Anytime. When Patrick says you got to do an interview, you say yes. He's the man. So whatever he wants.
Thank you.
You got it, buddy.
It's episode 14 of Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network, wherever else you get your podcasts. David Foote, Patrick Williams here. Thanks to Jason Shia, the voice of the Charlotte Checkers, for his time. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to check in with the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. Tony Andrikaitis from InsideAHLHockey.com is going to be with us to talk about them. But a couple of headlines that we got to get to, Pat, and we'll talk more about the upcoming All-Star festivities this weekend later on in the show. But perhaps the biggest headline around the league this week was that of Brandon Manning and his 5-game suspension for using a racial slur in a game this week. And it's really drawn a lot of eyes to the American Hockey League, but certainly not in the way that the league wants. This is an awful story, and we hear so much about smack talk and things that are said on the ice in the heat of the moment, but it's a line that you just can't cross, and it's a little bit upsetting to think that a guy crossed that line here even in 2020.
Yeah, you know, smack talk is one thing. I mean, I don't think any of us have any illusions that a bunch of 20-something guys may, you know, say some not-so-pleasant things on the ice in the heat of the moment, but that's a far cry from what this seems to have apparently been. And, you know, it's strange. I was watching the game, and two of them, you know, it was kind of just a scrum in front of the net. They were poking at each other, and, you know, it didn't seem like anything unusual. They go to the penalty box, and then you see Brandon Manning get a game misconduct. Originally, it was listed as abuse of official, and, you know, I didn't see any of that, obviously. It was eventually changed to the correct, you know, notation in the score sheet. But, yeah, this was ugly, ugly situation. Boko Imama, the Ontario Reign forward, good young prospect for the LA Kings, real hard-nosed kind of player, plays a good physical game, honest game. He released a statement as well. Brandon Manning released a statement. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the Edmonton Oilers said they're all be undertaking plans to educate their players on this. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, honestly, I don't know why you still need education on this. And I would say that the best thing to do would just be don't have these thoughts in your head and you won't say them. So, I mean, I don't know exactly how this will all play out, but yeah, this is extremely ugly to see. And 5 games, you know, is frankly, Brandon Manning should count himself lucky. It could have been a lot more severe for him. And, you know, it's there's nothing good to come out of this. I mean, I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people who say it should be more than 5 games. It should be, you know, perhaps upwards of 10 games, given the severity of what was said. And I think that a statement needs to be made somewhere along the line, perhaps by the league, perhaps by the Oilers organization, to speak out to how unacceptable it is. But 5 games it is, and I think you're right. I think he should consider himself lucky that it's not not any more than that.
Yeah. And hopefully this thing, we never see it again. And I think the next player, if this ever happens again, is going to get hit hard. There are always considerations with terms of suspensions, with the CBA and all that. But I think the next player won't be so lucky as Mr. Manny was this time.
Yeah, a couple more headlines here before we get to Tony Andrikaitis and our All-Star discussion, because we'll fill you in on the replacements, if you will, who's joining the AHL All-Star Classic roster this weekend. The Hartford Wolfpack, Igor Shesterkin, is one of those guys who will not go. He was called up to the New York Rangers, and the Wolfpack having to deal with life without him because Shesterkin hasn't played since January 3rd, and the Wolfpack have only picked up a couple of wins and a handful of points since then.
Yeah, and then he's back with the Wolfpack this week. The Rangers sent him down midweek, so he'll get some action here. Hartford's playing, and I spoke with Vincent Laverde, a veteran guy, kind of a real highly respected veteran around the league. Two-time Calder Cup winner, was with the Toronto Marlies, on their 2018 team. So a guy that's highly, highly respected. Had a good chat with him earlier this month, and he made the general point, no excuses, it's next man up. Yeah, Shesterkin's great, we'll take as much of him as we can get, but in the end, we have to win with who we have. They went 2-2 and 2 without him, they've had a little bit of an uneven time so far, but they're a pretty solid team systems-wise, so I think when Shesterkin most likely goes back up again to New York, they should be okay. They have Adam Huska, Tom McCollum, two a good veteran and a good rookie, so this is a much improved team in general from what they were last year. They're right in their contention there for first place in the division and really for the Eastern Conference. So they're a team to keep an eye on, but you'll take all you can get of Igor Shesterkin because I think his AHL time is coming to a quick end.
Yeah, they were red, red hot off the start of the year, and a lot of it because of Shesterkin's play. And we talked on this show about how goaltenders trying to make it in this league are likely going to spend 2, 3, sometimes 4 years or more trying to get that foothold. But he is very quickly making a case that if Henrik Lundqvist is close to calling it a career, he's ready to go if that's the case.
Yeah, excellent position for your New York Rangers. You have Shesterkin, you have Alexander Georgiev, and you have Lundqvist, obviously, who's future Hall of Famer. So it's a unique situation. I can't recall anything like this where you had three guys that really could compete for number one jobs on an NHL team. This is something to keep an eye on in terms of what the Rangers may do with Georgiev. I think they'll try to get as much as they time they can for him, Shesterkin and Hartford, but he's making the case where it's really at this point difficult to justify keeping him down there. He needs a new challenge. He's frankly handled this league very quickly. The adjustment there was almost not for him coming over from the KHL, and he did some great things for Hartford. They started off 8-0, and they'll be able to live on that cushion a little bit for the time being, even when he does eventually go up to New York.
And our last headline for the week is the hot play of the San Diego Gulls, who were meddling down at the bottom of the division for much of the first half of the season, and while they're still well behind division leader Tucson, almost to the tune of 20 points or so, they put together a 5-game win streak recently. It's got them only 3 points out of a playoff spot with plenty of time to go to at least make up that ground and get into the postseason. What's been the change for the San Diego Gulls that's led to their success of late?
Yeah, they've had a pretty wild season. Started off 0-6, 10 goals in their first six games. New head coach Kevin Dineen taking over for Dallas Aikens, who went up to Anaheim. Now they're 3 points off the playoff line with four games in hand, actually, on the Ontario Reign. They're kind of their arch rival. So they're in a pretty good spot, all things considered, considering where they were. The five-game losing streak ended against Tucson this week, or I should say the winning streak ended against Tucson. So this is a team on paper. There's a lot of talent there. You know, this was a good bulk of the team there that went to the Western Conference final last year. It's still been around at different points this season. They've had, obviously, their recalls have been an issue, but this is a team to really keep an eye on in the second half. I could see them going on a big charge here and, you know, maybe even get up in that top three in the division. I know that Pacific division clearly has a line between maybe the top two there, Tucson and Stockton, and the rest of the division who will battle for those final two spots.
But they're in a pretty good spot as far as getting in right now, thanks to their recent strong play. Another team that's been playing pretty well of late and also trying to climb back into the playoff picture in the Atlantic Division is the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. They've won five in a row. They've won six of their last 10 and starting to make a bit of a push here as we head into the All-Star break.
Yeah, Lehigh's a real strange team. You know, similar to San Diego in the sense a lot of talent on paper hasn't quite worked out there. But they did put together a five-game winning streak, a lot like San Diego did coming into this week. But they're going to be in a tough fight here. Started the week 9 points off the playoff line. So that Atlantic division's a tough battle to start with. They really dug themselves a hole, but you know, fortunately for them, they do have quite a bit of talent there. That's if they can get it all rolling, they'll be a dangerous second half team.
And we'll dig into some of that talent and some of the challenges facing the Lehigh Valley Phantoms through the rest of the season with Tony Andrikaitis. He writes and essentially manages inside AHLHockey.com, and he joins us next on episode 14 of Around the Way. Is on with us, and Tony covers the Phantoms extensively and writes for Inside AHL Hockey. Pretty much runs that whole show, really, don't you?
Yeah, InsideAHLHockey.com. I started it a couple years ago just as a way to sort of, you know, branch out and cover the entire AHL. I've been focusing in Lehigh Valley since, you know, their inaugural season in Allentown there. And, you know, just getting around to more rinks and, you know, trying to cover more general AHL stuff as well. So
you're one of the
it's
more,
been fun.
Yeah, you're one of the more well-traveled reporters I know out there. How have you found the challenge of trying to cover an entire 31-team league that goes coast to coast?
Yeah, it's nearly impossible, especially for just one person. It's such a big league, and you know, just the whole East West thing. You almost feel like it's two leagues in a league, you know, within the same league. So, yeah, I know there's a lot of rinks close by. I'm fortunate where I'm located up in the Northeast, up in Pennsylvania. We've got three teams there, and you know, there's a bunch of teams in New York. So, I'm very spoiled in that regard, but. Yeah, trying to, you know, cover the whole league. I know we have Jacobs out in Manitoba there, Jacob Stoller. I think you guys had him on. Have had him on before. You know, we're trying to branch out to the west, and him and Tom Dorsett too out in Texas. We're trying to get, you know, further out west. But yeah, going back to your original point, definitely very hard league to cover coast to coast, and you know, not a lot of interconference places. You're not really seeing all the teams, you know, live where you could get that, you know, really good feel for them.
There's not a lot of interconference play. There's not even really a whole lot of interdivisional play. I mean, we only see Lehigh Valley here in Belleville, once at home, once away. But the one thing that I noticed about them when they were here in Belleville a few weeks back is that they look like a Philadelphia Flyers affiliate. They I've said on the show before, you know, there's some other teams that you can't really see the relationship between the AHL club and the parent club, but I noticed it right away within the first 5 minutes of the game here in Belleville. Is that something that they kind of strive for down there, or am I way off base and not seeing things right?
I mean, it starts with just the amount of rotation between the NHL and AHL club. I guess you could sort of say it's a transitional year for them, you know, Chuck Fletcher's first full year. And I'm sure a lot of teams try to mirror the style of play and want to play that way. It makes the transition a lot easier. But I'd say for the Phantoms, they're basically just been in constant flux, and they're sort of getting figured out still, you know, midway through the season, as you could tell by the record, of course.
The team went to Lehigh Valley, which is really Allentown, Pennsylvania, back in 2014. They've been in Glens Falls, New York, upstate New York, for five seasons. What did that move to Allentown, to Lehigh Valley, mean for both the Phantoms and for the Flyers?
Yeah, I mean, definitely you have the geography aspect is a big one. It's just a quick shot down the turnpike, and you could see that league-wide now that, you know, these NHL teams and AHL teams are, you know, they want to be present, and they want to be, you know, close so they can travel. I'm sure the Flyers love this setup. They like to have a lot of those Saturday 1 o'clock games, and you'll see the NHL staff at the Phantoms game that night at 7 o'clock, so... definitely the location, bringing them back to Pennsylvania, obviously was a big thing. And it's been a great, you know, setup, and it looks like it's been a great relationship so far. So definitely no complaints on that end.
Well, Scott Gordon was the interim coach last year in Philly. He had been with Lehigh Valley previously. Now he's back in Lehigh Valley. What have you seen in terms of his transition back to the American Hockey League? Is kind of the reverse of what we usually see coaches do.
He definitely made it adamant that he wanted to be a head coach. He said he didn't have any NHL head coaching offers, but that he had assistant offers. I guess he just didn't entertain them. He likes being the head guy, and I mean, it's a lot of the same players and, you know, the same personnel, a lot of, and he has some new guys coming, obviously, as AHL teams do, but I think just the familiarity and being a head guy in a good spot in Lehigh, I mean, is attractive enough.
Now, you look at that offseason, that first day free agency, it felt like Philly was signing an AHL player every hour, on the hour, and that was also coupled with the loss of Captain Colin McDonald, who had been a real mainstay there for a number of years. What was that whole summer like, and how has that mix come together here mid-season wise?
Yeah, that first day especially, I felt like, I think they had, you know, 9 or 10 guys sign on the first day, and it was just like another signing was happening, and people were just like, okay, who did the Phantoms sign? You know, who did the Flyers sign for Lehigh now? And yeah, I mean, they've definitely brought in a lot of new players, and I know it sort of comes with the territory when a new GM comes in. You know, he brings the guys he wants in, and that's definitely what you've seen. A lot of guys, you know, from that Minnesota tenure, guys like Cal O'Reilly, Nate Prosser, Curtis Gabriel, you know, Chris Stewart, even currently on the Phantoms. Just a lot of guys from Minnesota have come over, and you know, it's taken, you could see, even halfway through the season here, you could see it's taken time, but especially in this last recent five game stretch, it looks like things are, you know, really starting to click for them.
When the Phantoms were here, I was looking up and down the roster, and while there are you know, a handful of prospects there, there doesn't seem to be as many as some other teams, maybe even a Belleville or what have you, might have. That seem to be, you know, on the cusp of getting to Philadelphia. If I look at a guy like Morgan Frost, what have you seen from his play this season, and how far does he have to go to get that spot in the NHL?
Yeah, Morgan Frost is definitely a big name right now. Recently assigned, you know, by the Flyers, he had a really good showing. I think he scored 2 goals, or, you know, had points in his first 2 NHL games, and then, his offensive play sort of trailed off. But the key thing for him that they've really been stressing, you know, in Lehigh Valley is just his pace of play. You know, when things aren't going right offensively, he knows he has confidence. He's going to make, you know, continue to make those plays. But when it's not working, maybe offensively, just, you know, sticking with it and playing well away from the play. And especially last weekend and, you know, last couple of games since he's, you know, gotten readjusted to the AHL, I think he has points in, you know, 4 out of 5 games now. And he had a nice 2-goal game Wednesday against Syracuse. You could see that. You know, when he's playing with speed and, you know, with that pace of play, he's definitely an NHL player. So it should only be a matter of time. You know, maybe after the NHL All-Star break, they could, you know, reassess the situation. But it might not be that long that he's, you know, gets another chance.
And there are a few other, you know, young guys on that roster as well. Maxim Sushko, Isaac Ratcliffe. Are these guys that are also, you know, likely going to earn a shot, or how much more work do they have to do compared to a guy like Frost?
Yeah, I know Frost gets a lot of the attention because he's a much, you know, flashier, if you will, player, you know, that makes a lot of plays. I know that they're very pleased with Sushko lately. He's, you know, seemed to adjust pretty quickly to the pro game. They like his two-way game, and you could even see last couple of games he's been scoring goals and getting it offensively. But even before that, when he's not scoring points, you like to see, you know, rookies adapt to playing away from the puck and, you know, stuff that, you know, they could get away with doing in juniors they can't get away with now. So he's definitely a guy that's transitioning well, you know, so far in the first season.
And aside from the first year guys, a guy like Germain Rubtsov already has eclipsed his point totals from 14 games last season, here in 28 games. I mean, he's not lighting it up per se, but seems to have made some strides over year one.
Yeah, he was a guy that actually missed most of his rookie season. He left in November with a shoulder surgery and missed the year. So getting back into, you know, the regular swing of things this season, you know, sort of important for him to, you know, get into these games and get that pro experience. But he's definitely another guy that, you know, isn't going to make a ton of those flashy plays, though maybe he's capable of. He's a more reliable two-way guy, and that's why you saw he was just recently called up just the other day by Philadelphia, to slot in their fourth line to play in these upcoming games. So he's definitely a guy that's on the cusp, and for him, I think it's more of just getting more experience and staying healthy above all.
You know, I looked at that team, and just a number of real top prospects have had pretty devastating injuries when you look at it. Rupsoff, shoulder surgery. Pascal LeBerge had the hip surgery. Sam Moran's just had one bad stroke of luck after another. Does that vibe start to go through the entire team a little bit and just kind of cast a bad spell? And just in terms of you just feel like you're trying to develop players and yet they're down here and they're getting injured.
Yeah, it's definitely very frustrating. But I mean, I think every AHL team goes through a lot of, you know, stretches where there's a rash of injuries or call-ups at a certain position. For the Phantoms this year, it's definitely at the center position early on, and it's obviously very important to have strength on the middle. And, you know, the remaining players did elevate their game, but, you know, when a rash of injuries or, you know, a barrage of call-ups hit you all at once, it's just a life in the AHL, and I think maybe more frustrating for the younger guys than maybe the older guys could understand and, you know, have been in that situation before. But, yeah, definitely frustrating. And LeBerge is a guy, he just left a game earlier this week with injury and didn't play over the weekend. So it's another, you know, concern. You hate to see a guy not be able to showcase, you know, what he's capable of due to injury.
This team had all kinds of issues early on, really most of the first half of the year, scoring especially. Greg Carey was one of the kind of few bright spots in that regard, and even he had some slow stretches. What have you seen from him, a real veteran sniper at this level?
Yeah, definitely. I know he won the hardest shot competition last year. He's a big shot. Everyone knows it. And maybe that's, you know, sort of the reason why teams have sort of caught on. I know the power play has been a big struggle up until, you know, the last couple of weeks. But yeah, he's definitely a guy that if you have good playmaking, you know, center that could get him the puck. I saw with when Phil Veroni was with the Phantoms, he won MVP. Him and Carey had a nice little duo going there. If you get him that playmaking center, and he'll get open and you get it to him, he'll shoot it. And, you know, he's shown, I know, I think the last 3 years now, he's been right around 30 or at 30 goals a season. So it's no fluke there.
One of the big storylines, TJ Brennan, a two-time Eddie Short winner as top defenseman, four-time All-Star, three times hit 20-plus goals in this league, and he's had a real struggle to stay in the lineup in Lehigh Valley. What has kept him out of the lineup for so much of the season?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question right now. It seems that everyone's pretty hush-hush on it. Right now the team has eight veteran players, and, you know, two have to sit out. And, you know, you look up and down the lineup, the veterans that are in the lineup right now, like a Greg Carey has, you know, four goals in his last three games. Or you look defensively, Nate Prosser's playing really well defensively, strong part of the penalty kill. Tyler Wotherspoon's playing, you know, big minutes for them on the top pair. He's just not playing well enough to play in that lineup. And, I mean, it's definitely a fall from grace kind of situation. It's very unfortunate to see. But, I mean, at the end of the day, the best players have to play. And I guess that's just where it is, where they're at right now.
You're on a current five-game winning streak there in Lehigh Valley. What's turned around for the team here lately?
I think just mostly getting healthy and getting a regular lineup, you know, with the I know the AHL, that's how it is, but I mean, these guys have been crushed by injuries and call-ups, and, you know, just the amount of new players shuffling in, and you're losing a lot of the guys, you know, that maybe you would have leaned on in the past. It's definitely tough, and it's been a struggle for them, but I'd say getting healthy and just getting some balance through their lineup now that they've been able to enjoy a nice little home stretch here where they're, you know, practicing at home, you know, getting in their regular routine. They swept the five-game homestand, and it, really the turning point for them will be if they could figure out, what to do here on the road, because they have been very bad at home. I mean, very bad at the road, rather. Decent at home, but you know, the road record is just not getting it done for them right now.
You mentioned that home base, PPL Center. Really, for my money, maybe the top facility in the league. For fans who haven't been there, could you just kind of take them through it and describe what makes it such a good building?
Yeah, I mean, it's for one, it's basically brand new. It feels like you're in an NHL rink. The environment's there. It's just something you need to experience. I mean, It's just a great place to take in a game, and, you know, they have the downtown, all the stuff downtown to do, so it's a nice little spot, and, you know, it's only going to continue to grow. You see the growth and development around the area just from year one to year six, so it's definitely, they're building something there. A nice little hockey community there is really strong.
We talked a little bit about the road record there and the fact that they've not been good away from home. Is that the biggest challenge you think they face heading through the second half of the season, or is there more that they'll have to overcome when you look at that veteran situation and whatever else that they might be facing them?
Yeah, they have to figure things out on the road. They're 4-14 on the road this season, which I'd be hard pressed to see if there's a team worse on the road than that in the league. So I'd say figuring it out on the road and special teams. I know the power play hasn't had a regular, you know, consistency going there with the shuffling of the skilled players up and down. But, you know, if they can get some chemistry going on the power play, they had a decent power play during the home stretch there the last five games. So if they could continue that and start capitalizing on those opportunities, I think you could see them have a chance at turning things around in the second half.
Just one more question for me. You're kind of in a unique position. You had mentioned the geography, and you're in that Pennsylvania triangle, I guess I would call it. You have Lehigh Valley, you have the Wilkes-Barre-Scranton Penguins, and you have the Hershey Bears, all within roughly an hour to hour and a half of each other. You know, for somebody who covers those games and all those buildings on a pretty regular basis, what's that rivalry like in terms of both at the AHL level, and then, you know, these are the farm teams for the Flyers, the Pittsburgh Penguins, and the Washington Capitals. So those rivalries kind of cross both leagues.
Yeah, you definitely hit it right on the head there. You know, these guys, you know, grow up developing in the AHL as rivals, and then, you know, some of them are fortunate enough to be rivals again in the NHL. And yeah, the three teams play each other 12 times each, and you know, with that comes that animosity of, you know, you're just sick of seeing and hitting those same guys and getting into scrums with those same players. So I can definitely see, you know, the amount of playing them has definitely fueled the rivalry. And just, you know, that Flyer, especially the Flyer Penguin and the you know, the Penguins and Bears, they just have that rivalry where, you know, they're facing each other in the playoffs. And this team got that team last year. And, you know, it makes the game fun.
Tony Andrikaitis writes for InsideAHLHockey.com. Where can people find your stuff if they're interested in following along or subscribing to what you guys are doing?
Yeah, you know, that's the website. You could go on the website. We have you know, links to information on, you know, becoming a subscriber and you know, reading all of our content. We do have, you know, just a weekly Sunday feature that's, you know, always unlocked, and you could get a, you know, like a sneak peek, so to speak, of what you could expect to find. But you know, we have writers, photographers across, you know, United States, Canada, even out, I mentioned out in Manitoba, Texas, Binghamton. I cover most of the Pennsylvania stuff. We have, you know, we're expanding, and, you know, as we speak too, we're always looking for new writers and new help too. So, and on Twitter, obviously, at Tony Androck. I know everyone's big on, you know, the social media these days. So, you know, we're building something. I really like where it's heading. I know it's cliche, but, you know, nothing, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, and it takes time, but I really like the direction of the site and where it's heading. So definitely excited for that.
Again, InsideAHLHockey.com. If you want to help grow that and be a part of the coverage, thanks so much for doing this, Tony. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for having me on. It's always good to see, you know, and talk hockey with you guys. Patrick knows every time I see him, we're talking hockey, you know, hours after the rink's closed. So I'm always here and always, you know, willing to talk hockey. And I like to see that there are people, you know, passionate about this league and passionate about the AHL. So hats off to you too also for, you know, undertaking this.
Episode 14 of Season 1 of Around the A with David Foote and Patrick Williams winding down. Our thanks again to Jason Shia and Tony Andrikaitis for filling us in on the Charlotte Checkers and the Lehigh Valley Phantoms as we get pretty close to All-Star break time here, Pat. And, I mean, it's not much of a break for any of the guys who are going to the game. I think for the Belleville Senators after Saturday night against Utica, they don't play for a full week, so that'll help. But three of their guys are going. Three of their guys now are going. Originally, it was just two, but so many changes to the All-Star roster. Maybe let's touch on some of those names. First of all, some of the guys that won't be going anymore, and some of the guys who will be taking their places.
Yeah, there are a few really notable. I would guess you would call it notable deletions from the roster. I'll start with Igor Shesterkin. Obviously, you know, pretty disappointing that he won't be there, but also not really that surprising. I mean, he's been up with the New York Rangers, and, you know, has had a really, really excellent start. Everything that, you know, they expected from him, he's delivered so far, albeit limited, you know, limited sample size. But the Rangers decided to send him down to Hartford this weekend while the NHL break is going on, and then he'll get his own break you know, after Hartford finishes up their weekend schedule. So he was probably the most notable one, but you know, there are you know, a number of other ones as well. Rasmus Sandin from the Toronto Marlies not going. Nathan Gerby, who's a, you know, a real fun player to watch, 5'4", plays for the Cleveland Monsters. He's actually up with Columbus now. It's been on a pretty nice extended run there. So for him, that's a big, you know, that's a big loss for the events. I should say Matthew Phillips, broken kneecap, great start with the Stockton Heat, you know, great young Calgary Flames prospect. So he's out. Kyler Yamamoto's out. Ben Street from the Binghamton Devils. and just go right down the list. Hershey's Mike Scarbosa, Chris Jager from Springfield, who's actually injured while he was on recall to the Florida Panthers. So, yeah, it's a pretty pretty extensive list of changes so far. And by my count, we're up to 9, and counting. Stay tuned. This is always the nature of this event between injuries, recalls. And I think if we're being honest, a chance to rest some players. It's a difficult match game, if you will. But, it's how it is. It's always been this way as long as I can remember, and frankly, probably always will be.
Yeah, and I mean, as nice as it is to have this event happening on the West Coast in Ontario and hosted by the LA Kings affiliate, the Ontario Reign, it is going to make for a fairly tough travel assignment for the Eastern Conference guys who have to go. I guess that's just a little bit of payback, seeing as the East Coast has had it for a few years now. But it kind of begs the question, like, does this need to change as far as the selection process goes? We talked about it a little bit before the show today. Maybe they just need to hold off on the initial announcement of the rosters and maybe just give a heads up to the guys who potentially might be going and then finalize it maybe this week, week before, so that it doesn't, look as, I don't want to say look as bad, but there's a lot less substituting that goes on and the rosters are a little more concrete, because I think the guys who are going to go probably have an idea in their minds that they're going to go, or at least somebody around their club has an idea that that's who's going to go.
That's an interesting concept, actually. I completely hear what you're saying. I mean, I think for a lot of fans, it's just confusing, right? And kind of, it's also a little awkward, I guess, in that, the league made announcements this year was January 3rd. And obviously each team, will make, a pretty big deal about that for each of their players. And, they put out the press release. They have maybe a little pregame thing, however they want to acknowledge it. And then 2 weeks later, it's like, scratch that. We're going to put someone else in instead. I mean, that's just hockey. That's the American Hockey League in general. But I completely on board with what you're saying. One idea I was thinking would be maybe if you released it in maybe like waves, maybe you every week leading, 3 or 4 weeks leading up to it, you announce a couple players each time and you start with your most sure bets. So maybe you're, AHL veteran types that are either on AHL deals and not going to be called up, or frankly are just, older and probably not as likely to be recalled. And then closer you get to the event, then that's when you you announce the more high profile prospects, because most of these guys that are pulling up are very much on the prospect side, like your Shesterkins, your Sandines, guys like that. So it'd be one way to do it, I think. And it sort of, I think, would, I guess, prolong the announcements sort of procedure, if for lack of a better term, extend a little bit longer, maybe build up a little bit more hype. I know the NHL did that this year with the last man in concept they have for their rosters, which I thought was a pretty neat way to do. I mean, in general, I would like to see more fan voting. I mean, this is a fan event. It's certainly not playing for keeps or anything. And, fans know who they like. And, I think, let's be honest, I think fans, especially if you limited it just to, within your division, fans, if you're a North Division team and you're a fan of that team, I mean, you're quite familiar with pretty much everyone in your division based on how heavy the divisional play is. So yeah. I think that would be one way to look at it and just keep some different ideas around. I mean, I think it's the nature of most star game.
Yeah, I think fan voting, it would be good as long as they kind of keep the constraint that only X amount of players from each team can go. Because sure, I know, with the NBA and MLB, when they used to do it based solely on fan voting, you get loaded up with a bunch of guys from the same team, and I think it takes some of the shine off of the All-Star game as a league showcase. But I'm all for fans having more input on who gets to go.
Or maybe just have fans, you can vote, you know, have a fan vote. They get to vote one player from their team in, something like that. I mean, I think you can try different concepts, but, fans always have their favorites that they kind of want to see represent the team in general. I mean, I know like the Hershey Bears, Vitek Vanacek is going to the event as a replacement, and he's a huge fan favorite with that fan base. He's kind of a, he likes to ham it up a little bit with the crowd, and they eat that up. And, so there's been a good relationship between him and the fans. And, you know, I don't think you would necessarily always see that level of happiness for a player going from a fan base. So I just think things like that, anything you can do to build that fan connection, especially in this day and age, I think is huge because there are so many things now competing for fan interest, fan attention. And if you don't give it to them, fans are going to go elsewhere. So I think that's something to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. And, regardless of who goes, we know it's going to be a fun event. There's lots going on outside of the skills competition in the All-Star Challenge, which for fans in Canada will be broadcast on TSN. For those in the States, hopefully you have the NHL Network if you're listening to this show because you're a hockey fan. But if you do, you'll be able to watch it there as well. And one of our guests next week is going to be helping to provide some of the commentary for that event. Mike McKenna and John Abbott from TSN in Vancouver will be handling the play-by-play duties, if you will. And Mike McKenna is going to be with us on the show next week, which is a big get for the program, I think, because he's been making the rounds right now and really gained popularity through last season based on the amount of moves he had. And then people started looking into his background and saying, you know, how many teams has he played for now? And now he's out as an analyst with the Vegas Golden Knights. So we're really looking forward to having Mike McKenna on next week.
Yeah, that's that. You know, like you said, that is a big get for us. And, I think with McKenna, he's always been that kind of player that is willing to give fans kind of a peek behind the curtain, you know, kind of a real insight into the life of a professional hockey player. And I think that's a result. That's why he's been so popular. And he's always been good natured about his, situation as a guy who something of a journeyman who bounced around a lot. He always, kind of kept good spirits about that. So he's, I think, going to be one of those guys, after he gets his footing, with broadcasting, that we'll look in a few years and he'll be on national broadcast somewhere because, he's obviously has great insight on the game, but he also knows how to present it. And that's kind of the two concepts that you need if you're a broadcaster. There are a lot of ex-players out there that can talk systems all day, but they're not quite able to convey that to the average fan or the average whoever watching the game. So the fact that a guy like McKenna can do that, I think he's going to go a long way. He's got a lot of personality, a lot of charisma, and we're pretty excited to have him. He's always been a guy, every time I've interviewed, as well, having talked to him, he always has insight. He's very passionate about the game, so I think it should be a really fun interview.
It should be, and also next week on the show, we'll have a smattering of various interviews and tidbits that Pat's able to pick up from his trip out to Ontario for the AHL All-Star Classic as well, so lots to look forward to next week. Before the All-Star Classic, though, Pat, there is still a bunch of games to be played this weekend, and that's what really makes this difficult for a lot of the players, especially, as we mentioned, the guys on the East Coast who will literally have to play Saturday night and then fly to California to be in the skills competition on Sunday and then in the All-Star game Monday and then get a little bit of respite and a bit of a break before the following weekend's games begin. But what are some of the matchups that you're keeping an eye on here this weekend?
Well, yeah, it's funny you mentioned the travel. I mean, you think about Belleville, right? They've been on seven games into the road trip, and here they are. They finish Friday at Utica, come right home the next night, play Utica in Belleville, and then three of their players will be out going on a plane out to California for two more nights. So, yeah, that's the life of an AHL All-Star, but this is a great weekend slate in the sense that we've seen a number of top players sent down in the last day or so as NHL teams go on their break. They want their players to get a little bit more ice time in the American League, and so the rosters at this point are probably as loaded as they've been really since the start of the season. So Shesterkin's back, just some real top prospects. Every team seems to have added a few faces. So, I mean, just schedule-wise, I would start with Belleville-Utica, a real clash of two top teams, playing a home-and-home series. That should be a lot of fun, seeing how they kind of knock heads. That's always kind of a good matchup. Kind of two similar teams in a lot of ways, kind of run and gun and very aggressive. I think the other matchup I'm looking at is Wilkes-Barre-Scranton at Charlotte. That's Mike Bellucci's big return to his home city last year, where he won a Calder Cup with the Checkers. Now he's with the Penguins. So they play back-to-back games down there. And that should be a fun homecoming for him. And I think for the Charlotte fans, he was very popular with them and, very outgoing guy and really built a bond there in his 2 years with the Checkers. So that'll be fun to see him go back there. And I think the third match I'm looking at is San Diego at Grand Rapids, kind of a nice matchup you don't see very often. And, two teams that have been pretty hot lately, two teams are trying to get back in the playoff race, get above the playoff line. It'll be fun to see those teams knock heads. So really good weekend slate. No games on Sunday, obviously, with the All-Star event. Then Monday is the festivities. And before you know it, we'll be back for more games next week.
Yeah, and we will be back to recap all of the action from the All-Star Classic. We'll have some quotes and comments from Dave Andrews in his final State of the League address as well. So lots to look forward to next week on Around the A, again, including Mike McKenna and more. Thanks again to Tony Andrikaitis and Jason Shia for their input on the show this week. Thanks to those of you who tuned in wherever it is that you get your podcast. And we hope you'll join us again next week for episode 15 of Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Thanks for listening to Around the A. Be sure to tune in again next week. Find Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Interact with us on social media. Give us your thoughts using the hashtag Around the A and follow us at Around the A Pod.